Morning Pensacola, Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Hey, where did we go?
On January 20th, 2025, President Trump issued Executive Order 14160, protecting the meaning and value of American citizenship. This order reflects the original meaning of the 14th Amendment, which guaranteed citizenship to the children of former slaves, not to illegal aliens or temporary visitors. Multiple district courts promptly issued nationwide or universal injunctions blocking this order, and a cascade of such universal injunctions followed.
All right, this is John Sauer. He is the Solicitor General for the United States, in this case representing the Trump administration at the Supreme Court, talking about this question of, again, the headline or the, you know, what a lot of people had thought is that this case would be primarily about whether birthright citizenship is applied to the children of illegal immigrants. A principle which everybody thought was settled law, and is, okay, basically, for more than 100 years, plus congressional practice, plus presidential practice, and so forth, but which the Trump administration has now issued an executive order saying not so fast. In fact, definitely not at all. Children of illegal immigrants are not to be considered citizens. They do not enjoy the privileges of citizenship, and we can treat them as non-citizens. And so, immediately they got sued. Every judge that's heard the case has said, yeah, you're crazy, and has created an injunction or a prohibition on the Trump administration enforcing that executive order. The reason the administration is in front of the Supreme Court is not to argue whether the 14th Amendment does or does not give citizenship to the children of illegal immigrants. That's a later question. That's what's called the merits of the question. This is about whether there are whether the courts are justified, whether the judges are justified in preventing the Trump administration from enforcing this executive order across the entire United States, the universal injunction. That's the question. And again, I know for people who have been listening to the whole show this morning, you're hearing me say this a lot, but I just think this case is so important, and most people don't understand it, the implications of what is being decided by the Supreme Court in this case are massive. Potentially, for not just this president, but all future presidents, because the question at hand is, what do you do when a president orders the violation of a right that people take for granted? That's now, he might be right that they're not citizens. He might win on the merits on the 14th Amendment, but everybody takes for granted that if you're born here, you have citizenship. But that same question could come up with regards to free speech or exercise of religion or right to due process or the right to keep and bear arms. Anything you take for granted in the Constitution could potentially be violated by an executive order. And if the Trump administration is right, then every single person who thinks their rights are being violated needs to go to court and sue to stop it. If the judges, or in this case, the states and the individual plaintiffs are right, no, a judge can look at that and say, that's unconstitutional. We're going to put an injunction against it until and unless the Supreme Court tells us we're wrong because they have previously told us you're wrong. That's the issue. And though I'm a bit loath to have to say it, Elena Kagan and Sonia Sotomayor were asking the right questions, and we're asking them in a very compelling way. This is Sonia Sotomayor.
Why should we permit those countless others to be subject to what we think is an unlawful executive action, as unlawful as an executive taking the guns away from every citizen?
And that's the hypothetical here, is imagine some future gun-grabbing liberal president makes a rule and prohibits firearms, or prohibits a class of firearms, handguns, shotguns, rifles, 223 or 556 ammunition. Assault rifle. What pick? It doesn't matter. Imagine if some future president says you can't sell, can't buy, or maybe even can't transfer, can't own. Okay, there's all different levels, even the ammunition. And you say, well, the Second Amendment protects that. And the president in that case says, so? Sue me. And then people do. And they win. And he says, well, but for the rest of you, it's a no-go. And then more sue, and they win. But he doesn't appeal it. They just enforce this ban against the millions of people who don't bother going to court to protect their rights for it. That's the parallel that she's asking about.
Cert before judgment would be another tool but through which this court could ask expeditiously.
And by the way, cert before judgment means that before you go through the whole process of getting results, the Supreme Court could step in and grant certiorari, which is the ability to hear the case. Theoretically, that's one possibility. It's pretty rare.
Why don't we grant cert before judgment so that all of these parents would have a firm Supreme Court decision that they can take where? Because you're saying nobody can grant a universal injunction.
No party has asked for that in this case. And I think one reason is that would deny the court of the benefit of percolation in multiple lower courts of a novel and
right
sensitive
now,
and important constitutional
courts.
Question.
We have
multiple courts right now who have already ruled. The need for percolation is maybe true, but do you let percolation means that it's going to be heard by a bunch of courts on the way to the Supreme Court and it's going to take time, evidence, lots of amicus briefs and so forth. Do you allow during the percolation time for the enforcement of something that looks unconstitutional, or do you prohibit during the percolation time the enforcement of something that looks unconstitutional? That's the question. And for most of us, the common sense answer is, why would you allow the enforcement of something that looks unconstitutional while we wait years and years for the Supreme Court to maybe change their minds on it? We'll come back to this in a second. John Pickens has traffic on the fives.
That's right. No accidents to report to you right now. Looks like I-10, I-110 are still flowing smoothly. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, John. So back to Sonia Sotomayor grilling John Sauer.
You claim that there is absolutely no constitutional way to stop, put this aside, to stop a president from an unconstitutional act, a clearly, indisputably unconstitutional act, taking every gun from every citizen. We couldn't stop that.
I disagree with that for the reasons I've said, including the equitable tools.
No, because you said to us we'd have to wait until there was a final judgment. You're not sure you would respect the judgment of every circuit. You're not sure that you would respect even a final judgment of the Supreme Court because it only binds the parties before it.
These are things he has said previously. Try to bring a class action, we'd oppose the class action potentially. The Second Circuit rules, we wouldn't agree to that outside the Second Circuit. We probably wouldn't have agreed to it inside the Second Circuit. Supreme Court rules, that may apply only to the individual. That he's said some of these things.
And if there's no class action, that only binds the parties before the court.
I don't think there is a, so to speak, really, really unconstitutional exception to the strictures of Article III or the scope of equitable authority, and the court should not recognize one, because what we see, not just in this case, but in the 39 others, is that the district courts who are issuing these injunctions all passionately disagree with the thing that's being challenged in that. So that principle that, well, this we think is really unconstitutional, therefore we should ignore the general principles of Article III, is not a principle the court ought to adopt.
Okay, his snark here is a little hard to understand if you don't know a lot of the issues. What he's saying is there is no Article III authority for a court to say, well, that's really, 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 really unconstitutional, therefore we're going to enjoin it, which is kind of the argument that she's making, okay? If she's not, but that's what he's saying. She's saying, and also he's saying that the courts that have upheld the universal injunctions have been biased. That's that last part about, you know, they're passionately against this stuff to begin with.
Let's assume that you lose in the lower courts pretty uniformly, as you have been losing on this issue, and that you never take this question to us. I mean, I noticed that you didn't take the substantive question to us. You only took the nationwide injunction question to us. I mean, why would you take the substantive question to us? You're losing a bunch of cases, this guy over here, this woman over here, you know, they'll have to be treated as citizens, but nobody else will. Why would you ever take this case to us?
If there's a million people affected by the EO, I don't know what the number is, but I mean, 100,000, doesn't matter. Pick a number that's large, but not zero, okay? There's let's say 100,000 people that are affected by the executive order. 100,000 citizens, it's got to be much more than that, quite frankly, but people who are or are not citizens based on whether the birth to illegal immigrants on American soil makes them a citizen. What she's saying is, okay, these five sue and they win and you quit because you know you probably lose at the Supreme Court. These 20 sue and they win and you quit for them. And maybe 5,000 people sue. and you lose and lose and lose and lose and lose. What about the other 95,000 or the other 995,000? They've just got to come to court to protect their rights? That's the only power people have to know that their rights are secure? And it never gets to us because you never bother appealing. You just are comfortable losing in these small cases. The states can't appeal because they've been winning. The plaintiffs can't appeal because they've been winning. How does it ever get in front of us for us to say, no, you're just wrong?
A case in which the government is losing constantly, there's nobody else who's going to appeal. They're winning. It's up to you to decide whether to take this case to us. If I were in your shoes, there is no way I'd approach the Supreme Court with this case. So you just keep on losing in the lower courts, and what's supposed to happen to prevent that?
They would bring a lawsuit in the federal district courts against the government for an injunction protecting them. And if the government wasn't respecting, you know, on the hypothetical circuit
precedent. Yeah, and then they win. And again, I mean, you need somebody to lose, but nobody's going to lose in this case. It's just you're going to have, like
the law is so clear, the precedent is so clear that nobody's going to lose at the lower level. That's why everybody's laughing, because that's exactly right. Nobody's going to lose unless the Supreme Court makes a massive reversal of its prior holdings.
Individual by individual by individual, and all of those individuals are going to win, and the ones who can't afford to go to court, they're the ones who are going to lose.
The tools that are provided to address hypotheticals like this, again,
this is not a hypothetical. This is happening out there, right? Every court has ruled against you.
And she's right. And again, this is not just about the birthright citizenship of children of illegal immigrants born on American soil. This is about guns. This is about religion. This is about due process. This is about everything you take for. This is about the right to vote at 18 or the right to buy alcohol. You know, what if a president gets in office and says, I'm going to make alcohol illegal? Well, we have rights. How do you know? Well, you got to sue. Okay. So some people sue, and those 20,000 people get to buy their vodka. And the rest of you, how? That's what they're getting at, is how do your rights get protected? Is it by default? Because historically, presidents will obey what the courts say. And by the way, this is very important. This is not just a Trump thing. This is a Biden thing. This is an Obama thing. This has been going on for years. And the only difference of a sort is the unwillingness to allow the universal injunctions to stand and the interest in fighting them to the point of saying, there's nothing you can do to us. Not really. The way the system is written, Article 3 doesn't allow you the power to do this to us, what you think you can do. And by the way, Neil Gorsuch, who is a conservative, so far I've been emphasizing Sonia Sotomayor and Elena Kagan a lot in the clips I've been playing. But Amy Coney Barrett was very much on Sotomayor's side. Neil Gorsuch actually said,
well, Justice Kagan asked my questions better than I could have. How do you suggest we reach this case on the merits expeditiously?
And he has no answer. Not really. So that's five. Ketanji Brown Jackson, Amy Coney Barrett, Sonia Sotomayor, Elena Kagan, and Neil Gorsuch. I think Brett Kavanaugh is probably on their side. I think John Roberts is maybe. I think probably Thomas and Alito are not. But that makes you 7-2. Now, what I think they're going to wind up doing, my suspicion about the Supreme Court, what they're going to wind up doing is coming up with some kind of a scheme, and there were hints at this in the arguments, some kind of a layering effect where certain kinds of tests be applied, and if the issue at hand satisfies these tests, then you can have universal injunctions. And if it doesn't satisfy these tests, then something else might be allowed. And if it really doesn't satisfy these tests, then you can't have universal injunction. I suspect that's the kind of scheme they're going to come up with in the end. But Ketanji Brown Jackson, I think, said it exactly right.
Real concern, I think, is that your argument seems to turn our justice system, in my view at least, into a catch-me-if-you-can kind of regime from the standpoint of the executive, where everybody has to have a lawyer and file a lawsuit in order for the government to stop violating people's rights. Justice Kagan says, let's assume for the purpose of this that you're wrong about the merits, that the government is not allowed to do this under the Constitution, and yet it seems to me that your argument says we get to keep on doing it until everyone who is potentially harmed by it figures out how to file a lawsuit, hire a lawyer, et cetera. And I don't understand how that is remotely consistent with the rule of law.
Yeah. Do your rights under the Constitution exist only until some president decides to violate them and you can manage to get a lawyer and go to court and successfully stop him? Or are your rights in effect and protect you all the time, you know, regardless of that? Or does a judge have the ability to say to a president, no, you cannot do that? Anywhere in the United States, you're wrong. That's the question at hand. And again, not to belabor the point, but this is, John, you and I have talked about this a little bit off the air. Until today and me explaining this, you thought this case was about citizenship.
I did.
And now that I've explained it a lot, do you see the significance of this case?
I really do. It's got huge impacts.
Absolutely. And not just for Trump. And by the way, this is not just about him. Again, this is Congress has become less effective at doing anything. Presidents are trying to do things they think make sense. You know, you don't have to believe Trump is a bad guy. You don't have to believe Obama or Biden were bad guys. All you have to do is believe that their presidents trying to do things that are effective, and courts are trying to constrain them based on what they think the Constitution says. What do you do in that case? 437-1620, 437-1620. John Pickens has traffic on the fives.
Brought to you by Barberry Plumbing. When it's time to call a plumber, call the best of the bay winner, Barberry Plumbing, at 477-8782. Still rolling accident-free right now. Not seeing anything. Let's see here. We've got minor delays on I-10 eastbound between Pine Forest and Highway 29 through that construction zone. Also, southbound on Avalon headed toward I-10. You're going to see about a 10 to 15-minute delay there. Just congestion issues. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the five.
Thanks so much, John. If you are thinking about doing any kind of home repair, renovation, or you just need some hardware supplies, of course, Pensacola Hardware's got what you need. And they've got experts who can help you figure out how to use it and give you guidance. And they will sell you things that they know are high quality. That's what they specialize in, you know, good, high quality things. If you build things for a living, if you're a contractor, if you're a, you know, a builder, they are your commercial construction supply business. They have been doing this for 100, and this is, I mean, unbelievable. Since 1851, 174 years, since before the Civil War, they've been helping people build, rebuild, and remodel Pensacola. If you need something, they have it. If it's a special order, like a specialized product, a, you know, a specified product, your architect needs something or whatever, they can do that. They do it for people all the time. And that's the point. They speak your language. They understand what you're doing. They have been doing this for so long that it's in their blood. Go in there and ask. They say, you know, talk to Jimmy or Martin or Mansfield and say, Andrew is always talking about you guys and what you can do for me as a builder. Show me. And they'll show you. And then you'll be like, oh, okay. And you know what? If they don't, fine. But try it. Just try it. Go talk to them and see what they've got. Right downtown at 20 East Gregory Street, Pensacola Hardware.
Celebrating 15 years of excellence, Nancy's Catering and Events has been feeding Pensacola's most unforgettable occasions since 2010. Led by award-winning executive chef Gus Silivos, Nancy's team brings top culinary creations and guest experiences to the Gulf Coast area. From lavish weddings and galas to seaside crab boils and garden parties, Nancy's has you covered. For more information and to see the array of menus and services, visit nancyscateringandevents.com. Nancy's Catering and Events, where your perfect event begins.
Here's today's Strength for Life with your host, Pastor James C. Johnson.
No person needs to pursue pride. Carnal pride is the natural resting place of a person's heart. In contrast, 1 Peter 5:6 calls people to humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God. Notice that the task to pursue humility is given to us. It says, humble yourselves. So what's your plan to humble yourself? I suggest that that plan should begin with the phrase, under the mighty hand of God. What good thing do you have that you didn't receive from God's mighty hand? The answer is nothing. Humility begins with the realization that every positive thing I am and every good thing that I have is all because of God's lavish grace through the provision of His mighty hand. Pursuing humility starts with praising God. Be sure to take time to humbly adore Jesus for His grace in your life.
That was James C. Johnson. He serves as the pastor of North Stone Baptist Church in Pensacola, Florida. For more Strength for Life, please visit our website, strengthforlife.church.
Spring is a great time of the year for gardening, whether it's fertilizing the lawn, pruning, planting shrubs and summer blooming plants, and of course, tending to that vegetable garden. This is Mike Wiggins. If you've got spring gardening questions, we've got answers. On the News Radio Garden Line, every Tuesday morning at 9 on the Pensacola Expert Panel. And if you miss us on Tuesday, then catch the Encore Edition every Saturday morning at 9.
Sponsored by Pensacola Hardware and Blue Sky Landscaping.
Guy Benson, keeping you informed of the news every day at 2, right after Mark Van Camp and Robbins on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Here we go. Focus. Speed. I am speed.
The trick is you always got to ask, how would I feel about this if it were a president I disagree with doing it? That's the question. John, sorry. Yeah, David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Well, federal officials are investigating the deadly crash of that Mexican tall ship into the Brooklyn Bridge. The National Transportation Safety Board ready to go team on Sunday, the day after it slammed into the bridge. It killed two people and injured more than a dozen others.
Very good. Jimmy Patronis, Congressman Jimmy Patronis, shows up next. We'll talk to him after the news.
Fox News, I'm Chris Foster. President Trump says he'll be speaking with Russia's president this morning. Fox's Peter Ducey at the White House.
President Trump does not think the war in Ukraine is going to end until he sits face-to-face with Vladimir Putin. So this morning's call, supposed to be 10 a.m. Eastern, could be to set the terms for that. President Trump says also the subjects of the call will be stopping the bloodbath that is killing on average more than 5,000 Russian and Ukrainian soldiers a week, and trade.
The president says after that call, he'll speak with Ukraine's President Zelensky and European allies. Former President Biden is thanking everyone expressing support for his recovery from prostate cancer, posting on X, "Cancer touches us all. Like so many of you, Jill and I have learned that we're strongest in the broken places. Thank you for lifting us up with love and support." He posted a picture of himself and his wife. Biden's office says the cancer is characterized as aggressive and spread to his bones, but sensitive to treatment. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 7:31 at News Radio 92.3. Right now we've got partly cloudy skies, beautiful morning. It is 72 degrees in Pensacola. Of course, we'll get more with our forecast and Brooke Richardson here in just a few minutes. Two people have died after a vehicle crash in Baldwin County last Friday. That happened at the 70-mile marker close to Alberta on Highway 98. 89-year-old Joanna Martin and 55-year-old Tony Robinson were killed after their vehicle was hit from behind by a pickup truck driven by a Foley man. Well, after that crash, the vehicle crashed head-on into another pickup truck driven by a Gulf Shores man. Robinson died at the scene. Martin was taken to Sacred Heart Hospital, and she died there. Later, the drivers of both pickup trucks were also taken to South Baldwin Hospital for treatment. Alabama Law Enforcement Agency is still investigating that crash. Rick Scott and others in Washington say they are thinking about the Biden family today. Of course, the Bidens announced yesterday that Joe Biden has been diagnosed with an aggressive form of prostate cancer. Senator Scott writing on X that he and his wife Ann are sending the Biden family their thoughts and prayers for the former president's good health and recovery. Democrat Congresswoman Lois Frankel says she is also keeping President Biden and his family in her thoughts. She wrote on X that Biden's a fighter and she wishes him strength and resilience as he faces another challenge. A Santa Rosa County deputy has passed away. The sheriff's office says Sergeant Dale Berrien died on Friday due to a cardiac incident. He'd served the Santa Rosa Sheriff's Office for 21 years. He was assigned as a patrol deputy in Gulf Breeze. Well, a shark fisherman became a hero on Pensacola Beach last week. Andrew Smith reluctantly went to the beach with a friend on Friday when a girl got pulled out into a rip current. Her friends were looking for help. Smith says he couldn't swim due to medical issues, but he did have a drone with him that normally he uses to fly his shark bait out, so he used that to fly a flotation device to the girl, although the first try was challenging and not successful.
I ran up and grabbed one of them and ran back down to the drone, and I flew it out, and it was a terrible miss. I released it too early. It was really windy. Like, it wasn't close at all.
And a bystander got him a second flotation device. By that time, he flew a bit lower, was able to get it to her. The girl grabbed onto it and eventually made it back to shore. She was given a clean bill of health by responding paramedics. Smith says the girl's father thanked him and called him a guardian angel after that incident. Well, just down the road in Fort Walton Beach, it appears that pirates have taken over the 69th year of the Billy Bowlegs Festival there. And that wraps up tonight with a torchlight parade. Friday, it kicked off with the skirmish where the crew of Billy Bowlegs held a mock sea battle with simulated gunfire and explosions. It's 7:35 here at News Radio 92.3, and let's get a look at our traffic on the fives with John Pickens.
That's right. If you are on I-10 eastbound between Pine Forest and Highway 29, we're starting to see more and more delays through that construction zone. Just one accident to let you know about, Highway 90 and Bell Lane, just some minor delays both in the east and westbound on Highway 90. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Thank you very much, John. 72 degrees, partly cloudy right now. Let's get our forecast with Brooke Richardson.
We are going to be looking at a beautiful day today with mostly sunny skies, high near 86 degrees. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping to 74. For Tuesday, 10% chance of a stray sprinkle, mostly sunny skies for most of us, high near 86. Tuesday night, temperatures dropping to 76 degrees. Best chance of rain for the week moves in on Wednesday with a 40% chance of a stray shower or thunderstorm, high near 89. Wednesday night, temperatures dropping near 68. Stay connected to Channel 3 News First Warning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV Weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Warning Weather Center.
Thank you very much, Brooke. 72 degrees right now. Our next news at 8 o'clock. We've got breaking news anytime it happens. Let's get a look at our market report with Your Money Now.
I'm Nicole Murray with Your Money Now. China's Xiaomi will launch its highly anticipated YU7 electric sports utility vehicle on Thursday, as well as other products such as the mobile chip developed by the company. Analysts have touted the YU7 as a challenger to Tesla's best-selling Model Y in China. Qatar Airways said it posted a 28% jump in annual net profit to a record $2.1 billion. The government-owned airline's revenue and passenger data from the last year were not yet available. The airline's complete annual report is expected to be published this morning. Ryanair has reported strong demand across Europe and projected that fares will rebound to recover much of the decline that dented profit last year as consumers struggled with high interest rates. The Irish low-cost carrier reported a 16% fall in annual profit for the 12-month period that ended on March 31st. Futures are sharply lower on the U.S.'s debt downgrade. Friday, the Dow Industrials gained 331, the NASDAQ up 98. That's Your Money Now.
When you were 18, you spent your spring break in Cancun. The party was legendary, and you speak of it often, even though you don't remember half of it. The geeky kid who sat across from you in math class stayed home, practicing calculus. You made fun of her. A lot. That is, until last year, when you owed the IRS a lot of money and called the certified public accountants at Benakis & Associates. And she answered the phone. Who's laughing now? The number crunchers at Benakis & Associates live and breathe accounting and tax preparation. It's practically in their DNA. When you need to know what the heck a Form 656-PPV is, call Benakis & Associates. When you need a QuickBooks Pro advisor, call Benakis & Associates. When you need someone who practices long division for fun, call Benakis & Associates. Now in the historic district on 120 South Alkanes and online at flacpas.com. Benakis & Associates. Leave the numbers to the experts.
As a business owner, you've got a lot on your plate. Managing staff, growing your business, training new hires, and more. With so much going on, you need Avalon. As an IRS-certified PEO, Avalon HR can help. From running your payrolls, remitting state and federal taxes, workers' compensation insurance, employee benefits, and our HR expertise. Avalon HR can help you focus on your core business while we handle the rest. Employing made easy. AvalonHR.com.
The Florida Department of Health in Escambia County works to protect, promote, and improve the health of everyone in your community. Listen in tomorrow at 10:30 to the Pensacola Expert Panel when Director Marie Mott will give a public health update. That's tomorrow at 10:30 on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
Hey, Pensacola, get ready for a midday delight that'll have you hooked. Weekdays from 11 until 2 on News Radio Pensacola. Tune in to the Markley, Van Camp, and Robbins Show. Jamie Markley, David Van Camp, and Scott Robbins are their dynamic trio that'll keep you entertained, informed, and laughing out loud during your lunch break. They dish out the hottest topics, bring you the latest news, and deliver their unique blend of humor and insight that'll have you coming back for more. It's the Markley, Van Camp, and Robbins Show on News Radio Pensacola, 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620.
Ralph and I agree, as does every Republican in Congress, House and Senate. Work requirements is a no-brainer. It's like a 90% issue on polling. Able-bodied adults who can work should work. It's
so
good
why
for
delay it?
Their own purpose and dignity. Well, as I said, some of the states have, it takes them some time, we've learned in this process, to change their systems and to make sure that these stringent requirements that we will put on that to eliminate fraud, waste, and abuse can actually be implemented. So we're working with them to make sure what the earliest possible date is to put into law something that will actually be useful.
Okay, so this is Mike Johnson, the Speaker of the House, who was talking with, I think it was Shannon Bream on Fox News Sunday yesterday, about the budget discussions that are going on in Congress right now. It's a huge conversation piece. Of course, President Trump is pushing for his big, beautiful bill, as he calls it. No stranger to favorable namings of things. Joining us now, we have Congressman Jimmy Petronis. Jimmy, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So this, the conservatives on the committee, like Chip Roy, had opposed this because it delays implementation of the work requirements for Medicaid. The Congress, you know, the Speaker says the states can only do work so fast. This is what we got. They voted that out of committee yesterday because I guess the conservatives sort of stood down and voted present. But where are we going with this? This has been the conversation in Congress for a while now. Can you kind of lay out where we are and where we're going with this?
Sure. Look, the average citizen doesn't know the difference between Medicaid or Medicare.
Fair.
Okay. And so Medicaid was a provision to provide a safety net for our most vulnerable, our seniors, our children, our elderly, those that are disabled, females. So what you had is you had the big fight during Obamacare, and you had expanded Medicaid to all. So the criticism is this, is there's able-bodied men in their 20s sitting on a couch somewhere playing Xbox that are getting free health care, okay? And so a conservative like myself said, you know what, by gosh, if you're going to get free health care, there should be a work requirement that you're at least attempting going out, securing work if you're going to have eligibility to that benefit.
So, just like so we do for unemployment. You don't get unemployment unless you try.
Exactly. So not trying to reinvent the wheel, but if you're going to take advantage of taxpayer dollars, you got folks out there that are just – they're killing themselves working two jobs in order to maintain a household and purchase their health insurance. This is individuals that aren't working that are getting it. So we're saying we're going to make a work requirement. So, I mean, it's estimated, I think, over 5 years, it's over $100 billion in savings. So the initial version of the language came out and said, okay, we will implement this starting in 2029. Well, myself and a bunch of others, we lost our minds. And we said, no, we got to start this sooner. And so this is probably one of the biggest nuggets out of it. It's probably not going to create the type of savings that is going to be transformational, but it's the right way to change the culture as we approach how we respect our taxpayer dollars being used.
And
so
part of the,
right now, the
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Has gone from 2029 to 2026.
Oh,
and so that's,
okay.
So that's a pretty significant move, but I would not be surprised if that still is now on the table. Where the Speaker was coming from is, look, different states are going to have a lot of fun trying to implement this new work requirement. And my attitude is, you know what? I understand, Mr. Speaker, but that's not a problem. That's the states. They're the ones benefiting from taxpayer dollars from the state of Florida.
And that's the challenge is you have, you know, some states, blue states more likely, have done things that have put themselves in a position of being able to say, oh, this is too hard for us to implement. and they're getting all this extra money, whereas the red states who have been more responsible are the ones who are like, yeah, we can do this. You know, when do you want it? Yesterday? So why would we cater to the states that have been, you know, making the system worse, bloating the system, when they're the ones who say we can't act on this, right?
Yeah, and look, it is what it is. These dollars, whether you claim they do or they don't, they become fungible. Once the federal government sends these dollars out, you know, we're not auditing every single dollar that leaves the federal government that goes to the state of Florida. You would think in the case of the state of Florida, they would be a good steward of the dollars. And in most cases, really, they are. But what you've got is other states that are upside down financially, like a California, like a New Jersey, like a New York. That, I mean, they'll take every federal dollar that they can, and then, you know, you really don't know what happens when it goes into their black holes. But this particular issue where it really hits home to Florida is a donor state. So we are literally paying taxes to provide health care insurance to able-bodied men who are sitting on a couch. And all we're saying is, you know what, if we're going to be a donor state, then by gosh, our dollars are going to be more responsible.
You know, one of the other issues that has been a hiccup or a wrench in the works, you and I talked about this last week, was the state and local tax exemption, especially for New York Republicans. I'll ask you if that's been worked out in just a second. In the meantime, John Pickens has traffic on the fives. John?
Still rolling accident-free right now. I-10, I-110 are looking good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much. John, back to Jimmy Patronis, our congressman for Northwest Florida District 1. Jimmy, has the salt exemption, has that been solved? Because, I find this so offensive that somebody who makes, $1 million a year, $500,000 a year in New York pays less federal taxes than somebody who lives in Pensacola, just because they have allowed their state and local taxes to balloon out of control and they can take that as a deduction against their income. It offends me. And yet that's a live or die thing for the Republicans in New York, right?
It is. I mean, we've got, you know, five Republicans up there. They walk around with little salt pins on their lapel, and this is their issue. But, you know, it's like I was talking to Senator Scott about this exact same issue yesterday. And he says, I got a solution for those New Yorkers. Just move to Florida. You know what I mean? So we don't have a state income tax here, so there's no deductible to worry about. And I think that's really one of the reasons why we've had a migration to this state. People just really want to keep their money. So where the deduction currently right now is at $10,000. You can deduct $10,000 of your state income tax off of your federal income tax. Right now they're fighting for $40,000 per individual. Just a few months ago, they were happy with $20,000. So they're getting way out there on this because they know that they have got more votes in hand that can stop the bill.
Yeah.
So there's going to be some type of an impasse there at the end of the day. And this is what the senator and I were talking about. As infuriated as I get about salt, the Medicaid impact part is a much bigger financial piece to both the state of Florida and our kids. So, I mean, I've been kind of more laser focused on making sure that Medicaid is managed in a way where it's not seeing double digit increases every single year. It's just out of control.
No, I agree with that. It's just, for me, it's more of a, but you're Republicans, you know, you're acting like parochial local politicians, because nobody has bothered to tell your people that they're doing it wrong, and you're doing the principled wrong thing for selfish political reasons, which I understand, but I don't agree with. And that's, you know, that's the thing that's so frustrating about it.
I'm with you 100%.
You know, one of the other elements of this bill, as I understand it, is it's going to reorient how energy works, and it's going to take away the benefits and the subsidies that go to green energy. Which I understand that's, you know, President Trump's like one of his big pushes. The concern, I know Forbes had a big article about this, but the concern is that this is going to hamper the ability of, you know, wind or solar or, you know, other non-petroleum based or non, you know, carbon based energy to really grow and develop in the country, which is going to be a problem for us in sourcing energy, if that's the case. Have you looked at that issue much and thought about kind of, you know, the green energy future and what that's going to do to the economy? I know this is a part of the bill. It's just kind of an interesting one.
Yeah, so the significant tax credits were made available to those utilities that wanted to embrace renewable energy,
right.
Wind, solar, you name it. So right now, you know, it's been as far as get rid of them all together. The challenge you get with getting rid of them all together is you've got existing projects that are underway that all of a sudden now you've basically blown up their investment. So this is where they've kind of moved to the middle. I think now they've said that they will go away in 6 years. I wouldn't be surprised if that number doesn't shrink and it gets to a smaller amount than 6 years. When you give somebody 6 years, you're basically saying, all right, you've got the incentive to start the project today and take advantage of those credits. But tax credits, you got to realize that's still taxpayers' money.
Right.
You know, we are basically not collecting. So it's a revenue concern, and it's also a policy concern, especially as you've seen President Trump try to unleash, you know, as many forms of energy humanly possible. And this is why you've seen, the price of oil do what it's done over his administration.
Are you seeing or hearing anything about nuclear in this conversation? Because I continue to be baffled about why it's so hard to build nuclear plants. I mean, we've been running our carriers on nuclear for 50 years. I don't get why we are so reluctant to embrace safe nuclear.
Yeah, so I did a term on the Public Service Commission. If you wanted to start nuclear today, you're talking about nearly a 20-year process.
Good Lord.
Okay, and you think about it, you're starting it today, 20-year process, and you're starting on the technology that exists this moment. Okay, so it nuclear is more of a two-episode show, but what you do have is there's a real interest to try to embrace small-scale nuclear.
Yeah.
Okay, and here I'll just leave it. This is probably where it hits home. Right now, a nuclear plant, say you go up to Farley up in Dothan, it's got to have a 120, 125 member police force that's got to be the equivalent of military police, okay, wrapped around that installation. And you think about the human cost of what it is to do that.
Yeah.
So now the pivot has been, well, why don't we put small-scale nuclear on our military bases? So now you're already taking advantage of a police force that's there, whether you want it there or not. It's going to stay on that base. And then you bring a small-scale nuclear on site. It's quicker and easier and cheaper to deploy. So that's kind of one of the pathways they see to bring nuclear online without having such a cost of human labor every single day, 24/7, protecting, securing, and monitoring it. At the same time, that nuclear would service the base, and then excess energy provided would go back on the grid.
Oh, I'd never heard. That's a really interesting idea, especially because, at least in the case of the Navy,
yeah.
You know, we already know how to do this. We can just, you know, do it on land instead
right.
of doing
that's
it on
right.
an aircraft carrier. Hey, last thing, we're talking to Congressman Jim Patronis. Cool little note. I think Mike Kohler let the bag out, a cat out of bag, just a little bit early on this, but he had mentioned in a county commission meeting that Joe Patties is going to get a nationwide recognition designation by you on the floor, and I think it's this week you're doing it. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm not sure my calendar off the top of my head.
Okay.
But yeah, Mike Kohler can't keep a secret to save his life.
So I
love Mike.
Right.
But actually, you know, Mike was the one who brought this idea up to us, as we were the small business chairmanship is Chairman Williams out of Texas. Great guy. He's a former baseball coach, car dealer, but he loves small businesses. I love being on that committee. And so he challenged each one of us, go find a business in your district you want to honor. And so, yeah, we're gonna honor the Patty family and their contribution to Northwest Florida, what they've been doing with Joe Patty Seafood. And I just get chills telling you about it because it's such an iconic destination. If you try to create it tomorrow, you couldn't. Only reason why it exists is because of blood, sweat, and tears and family commitment and a community commitment. And that's the type of businesses that we should be showcasing, where they're not asking anything from the government except less of it. And I'm so proud to be able to honor them.
Yeah,
this week. I think it's this week.
That's awesome.
This week. We're moving next week.
I love it. And you know, and I know everybody knows about Joe Patty and the seafood, but, you know, the Patty Shipbuilding, it was such a huge part of, you know, local business and everything. And just, you know, like you said, it's a great company. And we're really, yeah, I'm excited. It's really a neat thing for you to be able to honor them. Congressman Jimmy Patronis, as always, thank you so much for the time, sir. We'll look forward to talking to you again next week.
Yeah, and I had a guy that reached out to me on social media. And look, I'm telling you folks, I respond to my own DMs and everything on X. When you reach out to me, the responses come from me. It's not coming from some staffer. It's not coming from my kids or my wife. So just let you know, whenever you need me, you can just find me on X. It's the easiest way to find it, at Jimmy Patronis, or you can follow me at Patronis FL. God bless. Thanks for having me.
Outstanding. Thank you so much, Congressman. 754 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. You know, if you have any kind of a need for plumbing or electrical or air conditioning or heating, any of those kind of complex mechanical things inside your home, Peden, they can take care of that stuff. They've been doing it for more than 55 years all along the Gulf Coast, everywhere from Tallahassee over to Mobile and everywhere in between. You know, Fort Walton, Pensacola, Gulf Breeze, Baldwin County, wherever the need is, professional service, high-quality products, installed right the first time, 100% satisfaction guaranteed. That's been their moniker all of this time. That's why they've done so well for all these years. And now during May, okay, May, I can't believe we're more than halfway through May. It's crazy. May is heating up and cool off with a new air conditioning system from Peden. Get $1,500 off plus special financing. There are some restrictions. Generators, we're coming up on storm season. Get the best prices of the year before storm season begins. Save $2,500 on a standby generator through May. Dependable, powerful Briggs & Stratton generators. Again, some restrictions may apply. Find out more or schedule an appointment at Peden, P-E-A-D-E-N. com. John Pickens has got traffic on the fives. John?
No accidents to report, but we've got some major delays on I-10 eastbound between Pine Forest and Highway 29 through that construction zone. Also, if you're traveling southbound on Olive Road headed toward, or southbound on Davis headed toward Olive Road, you're going to see some major delays there. Other than that, we are looking good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Small-scale nuclear on the bases? I love it.
Love it.
I love it. Perfect idea. Exactly.
At Pensacola Christian Academy, your child will thrive in a safe, caring environment designed to build a solid foundation. Kindergartners become confident readers, develop fine motor skills through cursive writing, and sharpen problem-solving skills with engaging hands-on learning. Experience the affordable excellence and unmatched value of Pensacola Christian Academy. Learn more at enrollpca.com/radio.
Culver's knows that everyone appreciates a fresh meal that comes from the heart. They take great-tasting burgers seriously. Culver's Butter Burger begins as a fresh, never-frozen beef seared to perfection, then topped with real Wisconsin cheese and a lightly buttered toasted bun. And for a limited time, the Colby Jack Pub Burger and Lemon Ice are back. Visit Culver's today. Mobile Highway at Softly Field, Bayou Boulevard at Cordova, Highway 90 in Milton. Third-party delivery and curbside pickup is available. Culver's, welcome to delicious.
Bands on the Beach, presented by the Santa Rosa Island Authority, happens every Tuesday night at 7 at the Gulfside Pavilion on Pensacola Beach. Come out, bring a blanket or a lawn chair, and relax and enjoy the sunset with your favorite bands. This week, it's Pensacola's very own On the Rocks. They're taking all your musical favorites, shaking it up, giving it a twist, and adding their own unique and special flavors and serving it back to you on the rocks. It's happening this Tuesday night at 7 with Bands on the Beach. Remember, no pets or glass allowed.
News Radio Pensacola has a team of experienced and award-winning journalists dedicated to bringing you the most accurate and up-to-date news coverage. Informative, local, dependable.
Ole, arriba, epa, epa, arriba, andale.
Falling asleep at the wheel again, baby. You're drifting over the line, yeah. Your hands are tight, but you're losing grip quickly. Fix me, can you read the signs? Thumbing your way to Vegas.
Good morning, 7:58 here on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable. In Excess, by the way. And if you're not familiar with that one, it's pretty Vegas. It's a really good song. All right, David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David? Okay.
Oh,
right.
Wow. Cool. Well, there's the alarm if you haven't gotten out of bed yet. Russia sent waves of drones into Ukraine on Sunday, the largest attack since the start of the Gulf, or since the start of the war 3 years ago. Ukraine says that several homes were destroyed and at least one woman was killed. The attack comes ahead of today's planned phone call between President Trump and Russian leader Vladimir Putin. Israel says basic food supplies will be allowed into Gaza after a 10-week blockade. That announcement coming after the Israeli military started extensive ground operations against Hamas in the Gaza Strip. And SpaceX getting the green light from the FAA for up to 25 rocket launches a year from its South Texas base. The company was previously licensed for only 5 per year.
All right, David, thanks so much for the update. 7:59 on News Radio 92.3. Hey, anybody know when we're supposed to start getting the termite swarms happening? Oh, my God. Have you, in Milton, you don't have them, John?
No.
Oh, it's the plague of biblical proportions. David, you have them where you're at?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, like, over on the west side.
Yeah, All I did last night was pull in the garage and had to kill like 40 of them. All I did was have the light on in the garage and pull in. I mean, we're
absolutely
inside the house even, because they just come in. You know, it's crazy. They're swarming.
Yeah, I've got a dog door, and they're just all over the place.
Oh, my God. Yeah. If they're not swarming where you're at, John, mm-hmm. you're just lucky. Count your blessings.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, my God. They're terrible. Terrible. So, you know, just we're all in this together for, what, another couple days, I think. Hopefully it'll go away soon. Make it stop. Somebody call Moses. He can fix this.